Because he made them to be bad. See, it's not logical. And so we realize that that argument is not logical, because the other argument is God says everyone has to account for their life. If everyone has to account for their life, then logically everyone is responsible for their own choices, not God. So when we see this, we realize that no matter under what curse you're born under, or what kind of background which people try to frighten you and say, you know, there's no way you can be free except, you know, through somebody else. It's not true. If you will really seek God, and thirst for God, and hunger for God, Jabez, and your name may not be as bad as Jabez. At least your name sounds funny. He sounds bad. And yet Jabez cried out to God. And Jabez said in verse 10, "Oh, that you would bless me indeed, and enlarge my territory, that your hand would be with me, and that you would keep me from evil, that I may not cause pain." In other words, he says, he doesn't want to live up to his name. He wants to live opposite from his name. Of course, you know, he would do well to change his name. But notice, of all things, what other curse is stronger than to be named? Because it stays throughout your entire life. And to me, that is the strongest curse ever. Stronger than any charms and stronger than anything is a curse of having been given a name that sticks with you from the time you're born. And yet the strongest of all can be broken when a person personally cries to God. So in this listing of names, it tells you how important names are and how you can break free from that. So these are what I call nuggets that you can find here. And here's another nugget in chapter 10. In Saul's life, well, let's look at chapter 8 first, of 1 Chronicles, verse 33. Ner begot Kish, Kish begot Saul, Saul begot Jonathan, Malchishua, Abinadab, and Ashbaal. Now, do you notice something here? That Ashbaal was the same guy named Ishbosheth in 2 Samuel. Ishbosheth was made to be king by Abner after Saul died in a northern kingdom. When King David was made king by the tribe of Judah, Abner made Ishbosheth, Saul's son, to be king, according to 2 Samuel. Now, the other name for Ishbosheth is Ashbaal, which is a revelation here that shows that by that time, because Ashbaal or Ishbosheth was born or came to God or came into Saul's life at a time when Saul was already turning to Baal, to Baal worship. So it shows you the extent of Baal worship that had come into Saul's life. This is what Chronicles alone reveal, which is the unconscious and the subconscious influence, the undercurrent that was influencing Saul's life. Because of his appeal or going and drawing towards Baal worship and tolerance or whatever is in the area of Baal worship or submerging to Baal worship, you can see that one of his sons was named after Baal, which in the Israelite time was something that God commanded them not to do. So let's take it in the context of those days. And so these are little nuggets that you can find from 1 Chronicles chapter 1 right to chapter 9 under all those names. There are many other areas that you could analyze, and you could analyze for example, what we have covered just now in chapter 5 verse 1, that it tells you how the birthright changed from one to the other in verse 1. That originally the birthright was Reuben because he was firstborn, but it was given to Joseph. by the father. But then Judah, in the end, got it because Judah prevailed. Judah prevailed. That is in chapter 5, verse 1. Which no other book in the Old Testament before this tells you the flow of birthrights. You only read about the flow of birthrights from Isaac to Jacob. But how did it continue after that? How did that birthright continue? Because the birthright was important. The birthright was the recipient of God's covenant blessings physically to Abraham. And for us, we continue with a spiritual blessing that extended to all families of the earth. But there was a special, specific blessing that flowed along on the birthright. And here in chapter 5, verse 1 of 1 Chronicles, it gives you the inside story. How from Jacob, it actually moved to Joseph. And then from Joseph, it somehow moved to Judah's descendants, and it ended up with David, of which this story is about. How David now, or the tribe of Judah, held their birthright, or the blessing of Abraham. And then from the tribe of David, or Judah, onwards, he continued to flow right unto the Lord Jesus Christ. So you could see that bloodline that is drawn, even right here. Now let's look at the life of David, which is the prime emphasis of the book of 1 Chronicles. And in the life of David, 1 Chronicles is an account of what David did. What David did that was pleasing to God. What David did that was pleasing to God. And there are three major sections that we want to look at. The first is his beginning. And then the second is his administration. And the third is his transition. How he transferred power onto Solomon, his son. So as we see David setting up his kingdom, the beginnings of David's kingdom, in the book of 1 Chronicles, chapter 11 and 12, we see that there were three major areas that took place in David's life at the beginning of his career. There were three important things that took place that determined the course of his life. We all know how sometimes one decision in our early life makes a difference in where we are today. And even some decisions that we make today can affect where we will be in 10 years' time. How vital those decisions are. Now, for King David, there were three major areas in his life that determined his entire future. Number one was the building of his army. Number two was the Ark of Covenant. Number three was his covenant, his special covenant with God. These were three major areas, as far as God is concerned, that determined the success of David's entire life. So in the first area, we see the building of his army in 1 Chronicles chapter 11. We see the building of his army. In verse 1, it says, "Then all Israel came together to David at Hebron, saying, Indeed, we are your bone and your flesh. Also in time past, even when Saul was king, you were the one who led Israel out and brought them in. And the Lord your God said to you, You shall shepherd my people Israel and be ruler over my people Israel." So they anointed David as king in Hebron. Those were the Israelites. And look at verse 10 of chapter 11 of 1 Chronicles. "Now these were the heads of the mighty men whom David had, who strengthened themselves with him in the kingdom, in his kingdom, with all Israel to make him king according to the word of the Lord concerning Israel. And this is the number of the mighty men whom David had: Jashobeam, the son of Hecmonite, of a Hecmonite chief of the captains. He had lifted up his spear against 300 killed by him at one time. After him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo." Right? See, I told you the name doesn't make much difference as long as you believe in God. The Ahohite, who was one of the three mighty men. Now, there are records of those things that they did, of these three mighty men, and of all the entire army, there were these 30 people, and of the 30, they were the three most famous ones. And I want you to know when they came into David's life, in verse 15. Now, three of the 30 chief men went down to the rock to David, into the cave Adullam. Semicolon. And the army of the Philistines encamped in the valley of Rephaim. David was there in the stronghold in the garrison of Philistines, etc. Now, it tells you something here, that these three of the best mighty men, they were with David in the Adullam cave, and they seem to be familiar with Adullam cave. And if you break that semicolon into a full stop, you would have realized that they could point back to the time when David was in Adullam cave. There are two ways you could interpret it. Number one, that is referring to David fighting the Philistines and he happened to be in the cave. Or it could mean that they were with him in the Adullam cave, and that the other section was suddenly brought forward to the time when they were with David and they were fighting, and this was the thing they did for David. If you study the records very carefully, you realize that both are true and very strong. Because this David was already established in Hebron, and his stronghold was not in Adullam cave after he was made king. His stronghold was in Hebron. Later, it was Jerusalem. David's stronghold was in Adullam cave only when David was running away from King Saul. But Adullam cave was a famous turning point for David. And these mighty men knew the place so well that they knew how to go against the Philistines, go right through the Philistines' barricade, and took water when David knew need water. It tells you the building of the army. And these mighty men were among those who came to David. If you look over at the book of 1 Samuel, these wonderful mighty men, so famous in the whole of Israel in David's time, were those in 1 Samuel 22. 1 Samuel 22. In verse 1 and 2, David therefore departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. And everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was discontented gathered to him. So he became captain over them, and there were about 400 men with him. Do you notice that all these 30 mighty men came to David when he was not a success in the world? Say, what do you mean not a success? David was a fugitive. He was running away from Saul. To the world, there would be headlines. David demoted. David disappeared. David ran away. And the world is like that, that when the odds are against you, and when there's an opportunity to hit at you, the world tends to make it something big.